Hello, and welcome to a new series of Policy Pod. In this episode, we're mixing up the format, and rather than speaking to researchers from the University of Southampton, we thought it might be nice to introduce members of the Public Policy Southampton team. We'll learn a little bit more about the brilliant group of people who enable researchers here to engage with policymakers to exchange knowledge. Immediately to my right is Wasim Dabok. Wasim, tell us about your journey to PPS.
Thank you, Giles. So my journey in PPS started in 2019. So I was in my last year of completing my PhD at the University of Southampton. I joined the public policy unit because my research was on the law of the sea. And naturally, it had a lot of relation to public policy as well, which I didn't really understand very well. And I was really interested in getting closer to the impact side of the research and getting into that world. So I started having conversations around the faculty about opportunities that might put me on that direction. And through my second supervisor at the time, I was introduced to yourself. And I remember us having that chat in Boulderwood about the consultations activity that I took on board and I started managing. But yeah, it was so I went on a placement with Public Policy Southampton. It was supposed to be a summer placement. And then it got extended once and twice, maybe three times.
It's been a long summer.
Yes, it was a very long summer that summer. And then things developed for me. And then I moved into a joint role between the Southampton Marine Maritime Institute and Public Policy Southampton, where I'm performing a research function, but also policy engagement specifically around marine and maritime. So I'm supporting colleagues across the university with a marine and maritime background or research in that space with increasing the policy impact of their research.
I remember Johanna nudging me as I was coming down some stairs, which I thought was a bit unfair because I had a cup of coffee in my hand, and saying to me at the same time as I was slightly flustered, I've got this PhD student and he has interned in the Lebanese Parliament and maybe that would be interesting for your work? Maybe, perhaps. And then that led to that initial conversation. From someone who's been working with PPS for, going into the fourth academic year, immediately to your right is Hannah, who's just recently joined the team. Hannah, how about your journey to PPS?
Yeah, well, I guess I've definitely had something called a squiggly career. I started off actually doing astrophysics, which was my bachelor's, master's, and then PhD. But I spent a lot of that time doing a lot of science communication and public engagement, which really kind of had my heart more than the nitty-gritty, I'm going to look at a star and see which way it's moving. And so then I kind of was always going to lots of workshops and things like that, and then happened upon some policy workshops, which were about how do you engage parliamentarians with science and research. And that I thought was really exciting, a really different way to make an impact. And so I kind of kept trying to find opportunities to do more policy engagement. So kind of from astronomy, I ended up doing some stuff on light pollution and the night. And then I saw this opportunity here at the University of Southampton to do some real kind of local policy engagement. And now I'm here working with Centre for the South alongside Public Policy Southampton.
And your engagement with Dark Skies and parliamentarians, tell us a bit about that process. What happened there? What caused the shift?
Yeah, it was quite serendipitous. I happened to be at an event where there was the head of the Science and Technology Committee for the House of Lords. And I just approached her and said, look, there's all this stuff about light pollution and we have so much evidence and research on why it's so detrimental for the environment, for human health, for society as a whole, but there's not really any awareness of it in a governmental level. There's not really anything being done, no laws, no legislation. So that kind of led to further conversations and an invited talk, and then eventually in an inquiry which was recently published. So that as well drove me to want to do more policy engagement, because that felt like, wow, you can actually really make a change here.
The serendipity word just comes up so often in our conversations. It's so hard to be able to put a value on in terms of the conversations that we have with people and when the return on investment for those conversations comes. But without putting the investment out there, you definitely never get the return. It's interesting to hear that in your story as well. So moving around the horseshoe of microphones today, Fasma, tell us a little bit about your journey to PPS.
Thank you, Giles. So I'm a third year PhD student in University of Southampton in law school. And in 2021, around November, we received this email from one of our lecturers. That was the email that is forwarded from Wasim, actually. And he was introducing Public Policy Southampton and Policy Associates Scheme, which I was quite interested in. And then I followed up with that. And I applied to the scheme, and luckily I got selected, and I started to work on a project called Improving Understanding of Technical Policy Economic Landscape of Vessel-Loss Duty Saltbook Cargo Liquefaction.
A catchy title that rolls off the tongue wonderfully.
Yeah, we prefer to call it Saltbook Cargo Liquefaction, if that helps. And after 6 months into this role, I have been offered a summer internship by the team to manage the consultation activity. I started to support university academics with the consultations from UK Parliament and governments, as well as Welsh and Scottish parliaments and governments. And it was supposed to be a summer internship that would last till September. But it's been a year since it's been more than a year, actually, since I started this internship, and I'm still in the team, so...
There's something like bitterly ironic as we sit here today with the summer definitely gone and the horrible classic Southampton mizzly weather outside, to think of these long summer internships which have lasted for such a so much longer than the days of sunshine that we might have had. thank you, Fasma.
Thank you.
So again, moving around the horseshoe of microphones to Chandni. Chandni, tell us about your journey to PPS.
Yeah, so I came from a background of clinical medicine in India. I moved to Southampton for public health research, really. And while working in public health research, I did a PhD part-time, had no intent or much knowledge on policy in general at that time, but I think the first time I got involved with PPS was on a consultation from the National Assembly of Wales, and sort of really hit the jackpot there, as the team was actually invited for an oral evidence session pretty much immediately. And I remember a nice trip to Cardiff with Giles.
It was quite snowy.
It was ages ago. And then the joy lasted till we passed through security check, literally went outside the meeting room, and then it was cancelled because of the snow. And then later had to be done over phone. But at least there was that experience. But it was very, it was positive in that I got really intrigued and interested in this sort of space. And then obviously during the course of the PhD, worked with the PPS team on other bits of work. I was coordinator for this advocacy group for women's health called the Preconception Partnership. And then, of course, also worked with Wasim and Giles for doing some stakeholder analysis work there. So really, also, I think we also organized some workshops while I was working as a researcher. So it felt like a natural transition, moving to do something in policy after my PhD was over last year. And this sort of role was advertised, and I just thought it would be good to grab that opportunity.
Yep. Yeah, it wasn't the last train out of Dodge, but it was the last train out of Cardiff, I seem to remember. That snow was really, really heavy, and it just seemed to be following us as we were coming back back east to Southampton. Yeah, that was ages ago. And in a pre-COVID world as well, like you said, the follow-up was by phone. Like the idea of
telephone.
Being,
That was, like, I don't think Zoom and Teams were words then. But
no, I think like maybe that phone was actually like plugged into a wall as well. It feels like a different world, isn't it? So a long period of time at University of Southampton while doing your PhD part-time. So in enormous contrast to that, Jess Kieran, is this day two or day three in PBS?
This is day three.
Day three. Yeah. I commend your bravery of joining a podcast on day three. Well done you. So tell us about the journey for you in terms of your interest in starting at PBS.
For sure. So I guess my policy career starts back in Canada. So I have done my postgraduate in public health and environmental health and worked as a public health inspector in Alberta for over a year, mainly specializing or focusing mainly into the environmental policies, which includes food hygiene, water sanitation or treatment, as well as air pollution, as well as communicable disease control, mainly COVID-19, which included a lot of community data collection, data analysis, presenting those reports to the HAR management or as well as the government ministers to change the regulations, recommendations and policies around those. Then I moved to the UK, then worked with the nonprofit organization, mainly working around the maternal and early childhood policies, which also included maternal and infant mental health. So working, I guess, nearly for about 2 years now, starting new position here at the University of Southampton as a specialist policy officer for Faculty of Medicine. And I'm excited to bring all those expertise from my career previously into this role and excited to have new opportunities to meet new people, do a lot of policy engagement activities and bring positive impact into the new regulations or policies.
I don't think there are many people at the University of Southampton who have recorded their first podcast before they've got their ID card. So kudos to you for that. And I suppose, you know, as it's gone full circle, maybe I should do my bit as well. So I graduated from a program in English literature at the University of Southampton way back in the early 2000s, and went off to work for a couple of government agencies, including Ofsted and a couple of others, and then moved to local government here in Hampshire, working particularly in adult service policy design. And it became increasingly apparent to me as the process of the very first wave of austerity started to take effect for local government that the research capacity within local government was reducing and would certainly, as we look back now, significantly reduce over time. And I came to this thought that local government is problem rich and resource poor, whereas universities are almost the antithesis of that, hungry for problems to be able to apply themselves to, and in comparison to other parts of the state, relatively resource rich. And it seemed to me that there should be an opportunity for those two parts to be able to work together for better outcomes for communities. So I joined PPS back in 2015 have worked in nearly all of the roles within the team to now have the position of in the leadership role for the team. So that's the background as to how we got here today to be staring slightly nervously into each other's eyes with microphones in front of us. Maybe a bit more detail about what it is that we do within the team. So we'll see, maybe a bit about your core role and your responsibilities.
Yeah, sure. So with my background in maritime law and my affiliation with the Southampton Marine Maritime Institute, my role within Public Policy Southampton is really to support colleagues within the marine maritime space at the university with increasing the impact of the policy impact of their research. So I do that in a lot of different ways. And one of the main ways is to work with colleagues on their research projects from the development stage of the proposals up all the way into the implementation of the policy engagement strategies that I would tailor for the needs of the specific project. And I would usually work on these projects with policy associates under the policy associate scheme that's run by Public Policy Southampton. So there's a bit of management of supervision of the work that the policy associate would be doing, and also managing the relationship with the project PI and also the relationship with the policy stakeholders that we identify, because key outputs from that support is the stakeholder analysis that we conduct for the project to identify the policy stakeholders that we want to engage with. And how and when to engage with them. And also we produce a policy synthesis report which situates the project within its relevant policy context and to respond to research gaps through that research. So there's a big part of, like, a big element of project management and relationship management there and that activity. But I also manage the unit's consultations activity, which is an activity through which we I work with now. I'm currently working with Fatima on it. And as I said earlier, I was when I started my internship, that was the activity that I was doing. And we regularly scan calls for evidence. I'm sure Fatima will get into the details of that and support academics with responding to those calls for evidence. And so beyond the consultations activity, I also overlook our relationship with the UK Parliament more generally. So there are other pathways to interact, for academics to interact with the UK Parliament that I'm always looking to explore and build up on. So just to mention one of those, is I would mention the Parliamentary Office for Science and Technology and the work programs that they announce, and how we could get involved in suggesting new work programs as well. And I've also, for example, just another example, the UK Parliament, I work on improving our relationship with all party parliamentary groups that are relevant for the expertise that we have. And one of those all party parliamentary groups is the one for the ocean, which we attended a meeting for earlier in January 2023 and presented our reflections on COP27 and other bits as well. Beyond that, I'm always also looking to reinforce our relations and our links with relevant UK government departments. Just to give an example, I'm usually very present at events that are run by the Department for Transport that are focused on shipping in particular, given the expertise that we have around the decarbonization of shipping at the university. But also FCDO is a very, very relevant department, especially when it comes to the British Overseas Territories, for example, given that they're small island states, large ocean states, and we have a lot of expertise around marine biology, coastal management at the university and other areas as well that are relevant, like decarbonization of their energy systems and so on. So it's really focus on marine and maritime, but there's always intersection with other areas as well that would complement the expertise that we have at the university and produce a more comprehensive solutions to the policy challenges that are faced. And I guess lastly, I would mention my sustainability champion role within the team and my lead role for the net zero theme that we had for last year as well. I just have that direct interest in all things sustainability, and I sit on the university's sustainability implementation group as well. And I've been part of the university's delegation to the United Nations Framework Convention for Climate Change meetings. And so we've been attending those meetings since COP26 in Glasgow in 2021. And I'm now in charge of really working with colleagues across the university to develop a strategy, a longer term strategy for our engagement on that level.
I mean, that's some things, isn't it? That's quite a few things to be talking through. I think, you know, the role that you have in terms of working with Southampton Marine and Maritime Institute has really been a guiding light for the structure of PPS to be able to expand to have more specialised roles, such as the role that Chandni delivers in the team and the role that Jaskiran will be delivering in the team as well. Really helpful to have that depth of specialised specialization to be able to work on a particular project. So Wasim, you've got loads of things to speak about because you've been doing this for quite a while, whereas Hannah, newer into post, I don't know, have we done 6 months? Not quite six.
Three.
Months yet. 3 months, right, okay. So maybe tell us a bit about Centre for the Self.
Yeah, it's been really exciting because, so my job title is Knowledge Exchange Fellow, which could mean a lot of things. And one thing that has been particularly exciting is that as it's a new role, there's a lot of room to explore and to kind of shape what Centre for the South is and what we might be doing. But as Giles already mentioned about how do we tap into the resource of the University of Southampton and how do we make use of that in a local context? How do we support the local authorities, but also the local communities, and in solving some of the really tough challenges that are facing society today? So a lot of the work that we're doing, we really want it to be collaborative. We want to work together from the start and to make sure that the engagement that we're having with people is a two-way directional exchange and is not just one directional. And that it's accessible, what we're doing, so that we try and make sure that people can actually make use of the work that we're doing, whether it's outputs like policy briefs or executive summaries or things that are more practical, like we can bring people together and have a workshop and make sure that nobody gets left behind. And another fundamental part of it is making sure that everything we're doing is informed by evidence and is robust. And so that's one of the, all of these things have been kind of a really great starting point. And there's obviously a lot of work to be done. And some of the topics that we've been thinking about that are really relevant to the region are things around, say, jobs and skills, especially in terms of net zero. And how do we sort of support and mobilise the communities here to get opportunities to really upskill themselves. Other important aspects are kind of the access to green or blue spaces here. How do we support biodiversity? How do we improve our connection to nature from different communities, which have very different backgrounds across the region and within Southampton itself. Then there's also things around, you know, sustainable transport. How do we get people to engage in more active means of transport? Giles's favourite, devolution. He might want to say more about that later. and then obviously things around health inequalities, mental health especially, and also sort of the libraries and the I don't remember what GLAM stands for.
galleries, libraries and museums.
There we go. So how do we also work with not just the science aspects or the sustainability aspects, but also the arts, the humanities, the culture? How do we bring all those together to kind of help support the future of Southampton? Sorry, that came up again yesterday. I keep talking about the future of how do we find our common identity? How do we embrace a sort of a real strong pride in place here and find those hidden stories that bring us all together?
Yeah, it's really interesting with Centre for the South that, you know, lots of think tank organisations are based on themes or well positioned in terms of which side of the political spectrum they're on. But the geographical focus, I suppose we see it for IPPR North, but for this part of the world, the Hampshire region is neither the southeast or the southwest of England. It is its own area with its own unique set of challenges with pockets of deprivation, as well as dense cities having rural conurbations and the challenges that come from those different settings, as well as a significant chunk of this area being water, some of the busiest waterways in the world and fundamentals for the economic viability of the UK. So much here as a melting pot area, and I'm really excited for the work for Centre of the South to be able to uncover the evidence base that will support decision making in this corner of the world. Thank you. So, Fatima, tell us a bit more about the role that you've been doing as part of your senior policy associate role.
Thanks, Giles. So the work I mainly do is conducting weekly scanning activities of call for evidence that are submitted by different parliaments and governments, and identifying this call for evidence and matching them with relevant academic expertise and communicating with the academics and supporting evidence-based decision-making. Of course, I'm not alone in this process. Wasim is leading this activity, and there's a whole team is there supporting me in this. So the process goes like this. When Parliament or government publishes an inquiry, I scan them and enter our database. And then we as a team hold a meeting where we discuss which academic have the best expertise to respond to this consultation. And then I reach out those academics saying that we have this kind of consultation, would you be interested in? If they say yes, I then support them with some guidance documents. Once they start drafting their response, we as a team review their response and give some useful feedback. Of course, they are the real experts in this area, but we only help them respond to be more accessible for policymakers. After this process, I submit the response on their behalf, and I follow up with the relevant committee or departments for the further engagements.
Thank you. I really love this program. We were talking about it earlier on today. It's such a great example of value add that a knowledge brokerage can do. It's unreasonable, I think, to expect researchers to be scanning parliamentary committees to be able to see whether there's a topic which is relevant to their area of expertise, and similarly for government departments. I really love it as an example of like the hive mind of PPS, where we get to be able to come together to say, I had a cup of tea with somebody who was talking about something which is kind of similar to this, and it may just be that this is the type of thing that they can respond to. The support that you've worked on over the last year or so, Fatima, to be able to tighten up the support which is offered to researchers, and the encouragement for them to be able to put submissions through, I think is really, really important. And we've seen a really lovely uptick in terms of the number of submissions that have been happening there, which I certainly think is in no small measure down to your hard work. There is another aspect which I think is really charming from this as well, is the way that the digital communication officers work so closely with you to be able to ensure that not only does the committee clerk and the chair of the committee in Parliament, whichever Parliament, sees this great evidence, but that it goes out via the social media channels of PPS to be able to celebrate researchers who have made a submission and to be able to draw further attention to that. It's one of the things that I hear regularly from other colleagues is, Southampton seems to be doing loads of stuff. There was this submission that you made or that submission that you made, because it's seen. The accessibility that you help with, but then the visibility that comes with that is really important. We'll see.
If I can just add to that, and I think it's something that's clear to me, having been managing this activity since I joined Public Policy Southampton. I think it's great that with your added capacity and enthusiasm around the activity, that you have expanded also the search to look at local councils as well. And I think that touches upon what Hannah was talking about as well. So there are intersections with other parts of the team, and sometimes links and connections and discussions that we might have had doing our respective roles would become even, we would get even more fruits out of them. And the other bit that I think was also a real improvement of this activity that you've brought into the team, Fatima, is the tracing back and the looking at the reports that are published by parliament committees or government departments when they publish summary responses, and looking at that impact story, you know, getting the data that's there around the impact story and how the academics that we've supported in this activity have contributed in changing the policy direction or contributed in decision making, basically. So I think it's great to see how that activity is growing, and it feels like, I mean, you've also recently given a presentation about how it could grow even further. So yeah, I think it's a brilliant one.
No, it's one of those activities which is just iterated really nicely over time, and is so much more than the original program, which because I've been doing this for a while now, it was specifically responding to calls for evidence in regards to higher education. So just a really, really narrow focus. They came up kind of intermittently. It wasn't really that much of a thing in terms of our activities. And over time, it's been one of those things where a lot of my time speaking to folks within government, we sort of are perpetually in this dance of what do you need to know, and them asking me, well, what is it that you know? And you just sort of go round and round in this cycle of it. So when there are these formal opportunities to be able to submit evidence because somebody within government or within parliament has said, we need to know more about X, Y, and Z, it makes that that journey to knowledge exchange so much shorter, because there's a clear articulation about what the need is, which is, you know, in my mind, often more than half of the battle. But yeah, lovely, lovely programme.
So one thing I really like about this job is that I am having the opportunity to regularly engage with the academics. When I was having this initial conversation about this internship with Wasim, he mentioned that academics at the university know me because I'm reaching out them regularly with this inquiries and consultation opportunities. So you will have this chance as well. And it couldn't be more true. And the other thing I really like about it is that 1 year into this role, I now am very familiar with this process. But I realize that it's not the case for all the academics, because they are more research oriented and they might not be so familiar with these parliamentary inquiries and government consultations. So when they ask, so how is this process working, or what is a call for evidence? That confidence to be able to explain them, even though I am relatively junior to them and they are more senior, but the ability to be able to explain them the process and lead them through the process is really unmeasurable. And I think this is my favorite part about this role.
There are two things that really struck me from what you're saying. That it is really nice to be able to have that, not quite inversion, but being less held back by the hierarchy of the academic system, by being able to offer expertise to an expert in order for them to be able to have more visibility for their work, to be able to have more impact for their work. People are subject specialists, but the work that you do means that you're a specialist in being able to get to this particular mechanism for that evidence to be able to find a home and to be able to be used. And without you being able to do that role, then there's a danger that evidence stays within universities and doesn't get out into the hands of the decision makers. And the other piece was that I have this sort of very visual way of being able to understand the world, and the silos at universities are really pronounced. You know, sometimes people within the same discipline still might not know the work that each other are doing at one end of the corridor or the other. And I really think of us as horizontal tunnelers between these different silos. We connect people and we sort of pop up in different places and form networks across these different silos, and often have significantly better visibility about things that are happening at other parts of the university, allowing for those researchers for you to sort of, you know, come join me in my horizontal tunnel here. I'm going to introduce you to somebody in another part of the university who's doing work which is really complementary towards yours, but takes it from a slightly different approach. And that immeasurability of that function to be able to do that connection work is a really important factor of the stuff that we do. So, Chandi, how about yourself? What is it that you do in the team?
Yeah, so with PPS, I'm the Specialist Policy Officer for the Faculty of Environment and Life Sciences. And a lot of that does, a core activity involves project support. A lot of stuff that Wasim mentioned with right from the point of grant application or even before when researchers are thinking about a particular idea, thinking about the policy pathways to impact from that point, and then during the project helping with outputs such as policy briefs, support with policy associates, and really helping that two-way connection for evidence to policy and also identifying the demand from policymakers and supporting the translation from research to policy. But another core activity I have been working on is to build relationships with local actors, such as the Integrated Care Partnership. So these entities are linked with the ICS, which is the Integrated Care Systems established. And locally, we collaborate quite closely with the ICP of Hampshire and Isle of Wight region to understand what their priorities are in the region, particularly for health and health inequalities related issues. And as Wasim mentioned, for Net Zero, he's the champion. I'm the champion for the strategic PPS team on addressing health inequalities. And for this, we throughout this academic year, we had a range of activities with a forthcoming event in September. Probably it will be complete by the time this podcast is out, but it will be a multi-stakeholder event connecting and featuring a lot of the brilliant university research on that theme of health inequalities with local authorities, with the Office of Health Improvement and Disparities, as well as with the Integrated Care Partnership. So that's been a major part of my portfolio. And I've also been involved in other sort of more routine activities, such as supporting with some of the consultation activities and also with supporting projects under the New Things Fund and supporting policy associates. And apart from the Faculty of Environment and Life Sciences, because of my interest and background in public health, I've been supporting with projects in Faculty of Medicine and Faculty of Social Sciences as well. And so going forward, I really look forward to working with Jess Kieran on some of that work, and I anticipate a lot more collaboration on that front too. And there's also been a bit of overlap with Wasim's work, which is not, if I help with some of the environment projects that are not linked to saltwater, and so there's a lot of collaboration with the team members as well.
Yeah, it's, you know, the structure of a university makes sense for that university to, you know, to varying degrees, but that doesn't necessarily mean that it has fidelity with the outside world, or indeed what government is looking at in terms of challenges as well. And one of the things which I think is a core strength of the University of Southampton is its interdisciplinary approach, and we see that in the team as well. While we have demarcation of our roles and our areas of responsibility, the fuzziness or the bleed across of how we support each other is really key to the type of work that we do. And I think, you know, stronger than the sum of, or bigger than the sum of our parts, or whatever the expression is there. So Jessica, and it's a really unfair question to ask you what is it that you do in your day, because at the moment it's mainly battling the IT system to get a computer delivered and hopefully being able to get an ID pass at some point in the future. So maybe a bit about your aspirations for what might this role hold for you.
I think the biggest thing for myself would be to, or for this role mainly, would be to have or make a lot of connections around the Faculty of Medicine as well as ICBs, local authorities, and in terms of parliaments or in the ministries, ideally. So, get engaged in a lot of policy engagement activities, as well as attend all the networking events. So I meet people, learn new things, and be very updated to a lot of current events or current affairs, what's going on, so then I can deliver my stakeholders the best way possible.
I think those are all exactly the right aspirations, by the way. And while there are some of us around the table today, there are other members of the team who aren't on campus today, and there are four new posts which are coming into the team over the course of the next few months as well. So I think it might be nice to have this kind of conversation at a midpoint of the academic year. And just, Kieran, you can look back and say, well, are those the things that I've actually done, or have I done all sorts of wonderful other things that have been exciting as well along the way? I suppose for me, in terms of the role that I have within the team, my responsibility is to the strategic direction and the financial sustainability of the team. So I spend lots of time being able to hunt out pockets of money to be able to support the activities that we're looking to be able to do, and to be able to get a good understanding about what the horizon looks like for opportunities to be able to engage with colleagues at different levels of government, whether that's local, national, or indeed overseas. With an understanding about how we measure that process of impact, and how we, as a Russell Group, a leading research intensive university, looks to be able to support the wider sector, particularly through the university's policy engagement network, and being able to really have a kind of tide raises all ships approach. What are the things which we have explored and understood at Southampton, and what's worked for us, and how might others be able to adopt or to adapt those things to suit their institutions, with the overall aim of being able to support robust evidence to go into decision makers wherever decision makers need evidence to be able to do their role. So I guess that's kind of the summary for me. Certainly keep my hand in with projects as well across a variety of different fields, but not nearly as specialised as each of you around the table today with your particular areas of interest around the university.
So Fatima mentioned that you often have discussions with researchers on what's a call for evidence and how we can support from PPS to respond to these things. And we do have a range of training sessions. I was wondering, Wasim, if you could tell us a bit about the session that you run for helping researchers on consultations.
I think you're spot on in identifying that demand, basically, from academics to build those skills to be able to respond to these calls for evidence. And indeed, I started delivering a training session about engaging with the UK Parliament, which is focused on engaging with the inquiry process of the select committees and the UK Parliament since 2021, so 3 years now. And those sessions have evolved also over the years. I started off by having different individuals supporting me with the delivery of the session. So it's the first year, for example, it was I had somebody from a committee, somebody who worked as a committee clerk in the past, coming in and talking about his experience and what it looks like from the other side of the table. On the second year, I've had a couple of academics who have supported with the process, who have gone on to give oral evidence to also come and contribute to the session and answer some of the practical questions that might arise. Last year, I delivered it on my own, but I looked into new areas and new ways of engaging with the UK Parliament and following up with the activities to increase the impact beyond the submission as well. And I've also started giving that session within projects that I'm supporting with, or if, for example, Jazz was supporting colleagues in a project that I'm not involved in. But there was a clear demand from that group to really learn the skills to submit, to contribute to these calls for evidence. So I joined one of their meetings and I delivered that session specifically for that group as well. But that's one training session, I'm sure. And there's others within the team that deliver them. So I'm going to hand over to Giles. Maybe you can tell us about your session.
Yeah, so mine is less technical and more values-based, I suppose. So this is a session called How to Win at Policy? And this is, I suppose, in the training programs, we can kind of neatly divide those sessions, whatever they are, 8 to 10 of them a year, into two baskets. One, which is the Policy 101 session, how to respond to a parliamentary inquiry, how to write a policy brief, and my session is around the values and some of the mechanisms for engaging, particularly in the UK policy context. So we find that researchers, you know, really need to be quite robust and resilient to this process of engagement with policymakers, particularly for Whitehall, for UK central government. There is this wonderful phenomenon of Whitehall churn, where folks move posts every 18 months to 24 4 months, and as such, your key contact within government is likely to change a number of times during the course of a research project. So you may have to, as a researcher, cover the same ground more than once as you're bringing someone up to speed with an area, and also to manage a variety of different types of people and different demands that those individuals might have in the way that they want the information to be able to be conveyed. So there's a tenacity which is required to be able to keep plugging away with those systematic changes which happen. And then I suppose some other things in there as well, the humble approach. So rather than thinking, and not that this happens very often at all at the University of Southampton, but researchers speaking and assuming that there is a lack of knowledge for the individual that they're speaking to, being able to work with them to identify exactly what the areas of knowledge are that particular civil servant wants to understand more about. And then I suppose that other thing of entrepreneurial, but not in an economic sense, being able to hunt out opportunities to be able to pursue. Maybe that's engagement with a non-governmental organisation, or being able to seek some media attention. Perhaps it's something like Hannah's example of going and introducing yourself to a clerk of a select committee and being able to build opportunities which then come later. Some of those things are really quite lacking in terms of the training that academics receive formally as part of their PhD process or as a postdoc perhaps. So there's a definite need there, and those sessions continue to be could be well attended. Often I find that the training sessions are kind of the get to know you for a researcher, that someone might come to a couple of training sessions and then suddenly they've got an application that they're thinking about putting forward that now has a policy aspect that they'd like to be able to cost PPS activities in or have a bit more of an understanding about how we might be able to support.
I also wanted to mention some of the other trainings that we do ad hoc. For example, you know, over summer, I was at the hospital campus as well, delivering some training sessions, and we did a few online for FELS. And we are planning to do some more get to know what activities we do at PPS over October and November, which we will be circulating through our comms. But it would be helpful. And as I realize, there's always new research staff coming in who may not be aware of the activities that we do, especially for ECRs. There's sometimes an assumption that maybe we only support certain set projects or PIs or senior researchers, but we do have a lot of opportunities for early career researchers and PhD students to be involved in this with PPS as well as with the policy engagement side of things. And so I, along with other members from the team, will be part of several talks over the next quarter.
Yeah, I should say with the other, I spoke about there being one basket of types of activities that we do, but the second basket of the activities are the masterclass sessions, which the feedback continually is of a really high standard there for those sessions. So an opportunity for researchers to be able to meet with a former Minister of State, to be able to have an understanding of what good knowledge transfer looks like from a political perspective, engaging with a former chief analyst to be able to have an understanding about what the analyst to academic relationship looks like, and then a former head of policy within a UK central government department to be able to speak about what it looks like from the policy perspective, and trying to just break down that idea that government is a homogenous mass but actually is made up of a variety of different actors with a different series of motivations which require communication in a slightly different and nuanced manner. But those sessions are always very well attended, and certainly those should be by the time that this podcast is released, the information for those will be on the website for the new academic year.
And on the note of training, another hat I wear is that I'm a WHO consultant with the Life Course and Aging Unit. And based on some of the activities we've done in the past, we observed that among the PPS membership within researchers, particularly working in the field of health, there was this interest in understanding the sort of processes of connecting with UN organizations such as UNICEF and WHO, as well as to hear from experiences of people who have. So for this academic year, I will be delivering a session on international engagement, working with Wasim on this one to identify some good examples as well. But there will be a focus on the WHO in particular, and just providing an overview of how that sort of evidence to policy translation occurs through that organization, and also providing some examples from my previous role supporting the implementation of a life course approach to health in practice. So this will be sometime in January next year. So look out for that.
Thank you. In the spirit of mixing up the format of Policy Pod, we'd love to hear from you, dear listener. Are there policy-related topics that are being examined by the Welsh, Scottish or UK government that you'd like to understand more about? If there are, get in contact with us via the link in the show notes, and we'll be able to record a podcast episode with relevant expertise to be able to provide you with a robust and impartial briefing on that very topic. But in the meantime, goodbye.